In early 2010, a group of American soldiers, members of the 5th Stryker Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division in Kandahar Province, decided to make a sport of intentionally killing Afghan civilians. And they even called themselves the Kill Team. In his new documentary called The Kill Team, Oscar-nominated director Dan Krause tells the story of Adam Winfield, a soldier who knew of these killings and alerted the military to the crimes, but his warnings fell on deaf ears, and his life was threatened by the team. After he witnessed one killing without stopping it, he was charged, along with the other soldiers, of premeditated murder. The film opens today at the Film Society of Lincoln Center, and I'm very pleased to welcome Dan Krause to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
How did this story first come to your attention?
I read a New York Times article in the spring of 2011 that spoke broadly about the cases, but in that article, there was a photograph, actually, of Adam Winfield with his parents smiling broadly, a skinny young kid. And the caption underneath the photograph identified him as both a whistleblower and a murder suspect. And that description alarmed me. I thought, you know, how could he have been both accused of acting in the moral wrong and credited with acting in the moral right?
Didn't you originally work as a videographer for Winfield's defense team?
That's not exactly how it played out. I had a conversation early on with the attorney, the defense attorney for Adam Winfield, in which he expressed a need for some video material for his trial preparation. And we came to an understanding that I could provide that in exchange for being able to film all the pretrial process, as long as I maintain control and ownership of that material.
When you decided to expand it into a documentary, were you concerned that it might be seen as a conflict of interest since you had helped Adam and wanted to, at the same time, make an unbiased film? Another contradiction in the story.
Yes, there was some tension in that decision, of course. But by maintaining control and ownership of it, I was able to also maintain a level of independence. I made it very clear from the outset that I was not going to make the Free Adam Winfield movie.
Can you provide some background on Adam Winfield? How long had he been in the military?
He had been in the military for about 3 years before his unit stood up and was deployed. He joined when he was 17. He was very eager to be a part of the military. He saw it as an opportunity to prove himself, to be a part of history. So by the time he deployed, he actually joined despite his parents' desire in some way. He was only 17, so he needed their permission, and they didn't want to show that they were not confident in him, so they allowed him to proceed.
How long had he been in the area when he realized that other members of his team were doing something that is unacceptable?
He knew almost immediately that crimes had occurred. It was well known in his unit.
It was kind of an open secret.
It was an open secret, there was brazen talk about it afterward. So he knew immediately that a crime had occurred.
Had many people been killed by then?
His unit saw very little action up until that point, and that was one of the factors, of course, that led to these episodes.
Did he report it to a higher-up?
He didn't. He kept quiet about it initially, but then his misgivings weighed on him increasingly until he made the decision to reach out to his family. He felt that he wasn't safe to reach out to people at this forward operating base for fear that it would filter back to the platoon and they would carry out retribution in their own way. So he reached out to his father to alert the military through back channels.
And his father called the military?
His father called various branches of the military and the government and left messages for most of them and didn't get callbacks.
Has it ever been determined, because this thing has been investigated since, why his warnings weren't taken seriously?
Yes, it has been investigated. There was an investigation over one phone call in particular when the one member of the military that Chris Winfield was able to speak with, a duty officer at Fort Lewis, Washington, in Washington State, did not pass his admonitions up to a higher level in the chain, and that particular episode was investigated.
You have to wonder why, considering the scandals that arose out of killings during the Korean War and then the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. There have been some other cases as well. Why the military wouldn't be very concerned about this sort of thing?
Well, it's interesting because I think they are concerned about it. But when someone receives a phone call like this, it's very difficult for them to take action from overseas. I think the Army certainly could have done more to investigate the alert signal that was sent out by Winfield family. But at that time, the Winfields made a decision to stay quiet and let Adam report the crimes when he gets home.
How many people were in the kill team?
Well, five soldiers were charged with various forms of murder, with premeditated murder.
One of them was Adam Winfield.
11 soldiers were charged in total.
Mm-hmm. And they were led by Staff Sergeant Calvin Gibbs. Was he older than the others?
Yes, he was older. He was a combat veteran. He had already served 3 tours. This is his 4th tour. He was a very charismatic leader, a great tactical leader, one that really the soldiers felt they were safe following. And so they were very apt to kind of go in his direction.
And he's the one who came up with the idea of, hey, let's go out and kill some people?
Allegedly, he was the one who initiated these discussions. And, you have to imagine when you're a young soldier, your first deployment, this guy is very influential. He's someone that you want to believe is doing the right thing.
Were most of the others, Jeremy Morlock, Andrew Holmes, Justin Stoner, were they teenagers still?
Holmes was a teenager. He was 19. The rest of them were just past past being teenagers, but they were very young.
The first victim, Gul Mudin, was a young farmer in a nearby village who they killed in broad daylight. Was it premeditated or was it just something on the spur of the moment?
No, it was premeditated. They had spoke about this specific scenario for days leading up to this episode, and they had been seeking an opportunity. And when they found it, they carried out this plan exactly as they had discussed.
Was he a specific target or was he just somebody who they saw and said, okay, let's do it now?
It was a crime of opportunity. They saw him. They were detached from the platoon. They were isolated and they thought they could carry it out and get away with it.
Well, I assume that his family complained. People in the village complained. How were they able to get away with it and the subsequent murders?
They used a technique called drop weapon to make it appear as though their victims had engaged them in legitimate combat. So they would scavenge weaponry from the battlefield, AK-47 magazines, grenades, things of this nature, and they would drop it after they would kill somebody, and it made it appear as though they were legitimate engagements.
And just for fun? Was this a sport?
I think to say it was for fun is perhaps oversimplifying it. I think you have to recognize that the culture of the military, you earn respect by what you do as a warrior. And getting a combat kill, even in this case, if it's not a legitimate kill, earns you a certain level of respect.
So there isn't a clear line between killing sprees and war?
Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? This is brought up in the film, this idea that you trained us to kill. You sent us over here with instructions to kill everything in our way. Why are you surprised and disappointed when we carry out those instructions?
Some people obviously don't cross those lines.
Yes, so the vast majority.
So these were the ones who either were impressionable, Sergeant Gibbs could get them to go along with him, but they also may very well have had other issues which would have allowed them to do it. How many civilians did they kill in total?
They were charged in the deaths of the illegal killings of 3 civilians. So that's what we know.
Is it true that one of the soldiers even cut off a victim's fingers as some kind of a trophy?
Yes. Staff Sergeant Gibbs, the leader of this, the squad leader of this group, had taken fingers from some of the victims and kept them as trophies.
My guest is Dan Krause, who's the director of a film called The Kill Team, which opens today at the Film Society of Lincoln Center. Adam Winfield, unlike The Kill Team, believed targeting civilians was wrong. So did he pay the price of being a whistleblower?
Well, he was an attempted whistleblower. He tried to alert the military and failed. And that's one of the tragedies of the story, is his regret for perhaps not doing as much as he could. And so he paid the price in terms of of distancing himself from the group and putting himself in their in danger because they
knew he was a possible leak.
Exactly. Yeah. And they weren't willing, obviously, to allow him to put them in jail for the rest of their lives.
Do we know if this was unique to this platoon?
We don't.
Because we've seen war crimes like this in the past. I mentioned My Lai. I mentioned, Norman Mailer wrote about him in his first major novel.
You can read about war crimes in the Iliad, in the Bible. War crimes go back to the beginning of recorded history. We're not uncovering something new here. And the question is, why does this happen over and over again? And that was what drew me to understand better the psychology that led to these episodes.
How did you gain access to some of the footage and photographs like those of the bodies of victims?
All of the material from Afghanistan was confiscated from the cameras and the laptops of the soldiers who were involved and leaked to me and leaked to many other journalists and reporters in the course of the trials. Much of it is online now, in fact.
Did all of the soldiers in the kill team agree to be interviewed?
No. The most notable exception, of course, is Staff Sergeant Gibbs, the supposed alleged ringleader. It was very difficult at first because, I thought, well, without Gibbs, it's hard to imagine this film feeling complete. But an interesting thing happened along the way where in his absence, he actually grew to mythic proportion. His shadow was in some ways more narratively meaningful for the film than his actual presence. And so it was in some ways a fortunate episode.
But you did speak to some of them. What did they tell you? How did they justify themselves, other than to say it was wartime and they were trained to kill?
Yeah, I think there are explanations. One important point that was brought to me repeatedly was that there was a disconnect between their training and the mission. They were trained as infantry soldiers. They were trained in the application of violence, and they were then tasked to do nation building. And the restrictions of that time in 2010 were such that they felt that the rules that prevented them from employing their tools as infantrymen actually protected the people that were trying to kill them more than they protected the soldiers themselves.
But they were killing unarmed farmers and the like.
Yes. this was an unfortunate sort of outcropping of this frustration that built inside them, the sense of betrayal that they weren't doing what they were sent to do. They weren't getting to fulfill their mission as infantrymen.
One of the most poignant scenes in the documentary is about Adam's choice to let the team murder a civilian in order to protect his own life. That's what got him into trouble.
And he has accepted responsibility for not preventing the others from carrying out this murder. But I think it's a worthy question to ask. What would any of us have done in that circumstance where a murder is occurring directly in front of us? Would you shoot your own men? Would you potentially put your own life on the line to save the life of another person? These are questions that can't be answered in a blink of an eye.
But he is considered guilty simply because he was along for the ride?
He is considered guilty because he failed to prevent the others from carrying out the murder. He was charged and convicted of involuntary manslaughter.
Did the fact that he had tried to be a whistleblower in any way affect the way he was treated in court?
I think it was a huge mitigating circumstance. I think all of the evidence that showed him attempting to alert the military through his father really made a difference in court.
You've said that you just couldn't understand how a soldier could be considered in the moral right and in the moral wrong.
That's right. I mean, and what I've since come to recognize is that even though soldiers are capable of great heroism, they're human beings. And just like us, they encompass both the good and the bad. They're capable of doing good in the world and sometimes making mistakes. And these are complicated situations and complicated psychological variables that are kind of exist in all of these kids.
Were you surprised by the outcome of the trials?
Well, I think you can argue, some would argue that justice was done. They got their man. Gibbs is sentenced to life. Adam got 3 years. But I think there's a legitimate complaint to be recognized that no one higher than Staff Sergeant was found culpable. No officers, no leadership. They stemmed the upper echelons from absorbing any of this blow.
In Abu Ghraib, neither.
That's right. There's a tendency, I think there's a tendency on the part of the military to insulate them, the upper level of command, from culpability.
In her review of the film, I hate to bring this up, in today's New York Times, Manola Dargis wondered, and I'm quoting, why a movie that initially seems to be about one thing, as its shocker title suggests, is a partisan portrait of Specialist Winfield and his family.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I approach the film with empathy, and sometimes empathy can be mistaken for advocacy. As I mentioned earlier, this was never a film that was intended to lobby for Adam's innocence. And in fact, I think we went to great pains to show Adam stuck in the middle between these two moral poles, right and wrong, and trapped, paralyzed with fear. I think that is, it reflects the reality of Adam's circumstance in a way that is very sobering and doesn't frame him in terms of the familiar story of the wrongly imprisoned man.
Gibbs got life. Adam got 3 years. What did the other guys get?
Morlock received 24 years in a plea deal, 8 years per murder. Andrew Holmes received 7 years.
Dan Krause will be doing a Q&A moderated by Mark Bowl tonight at the 7:15 screening of his film, The Kill Team. That's at the Eleanor Bunin Theater at the Film Society of Lincoln Center. More information is on our show page at WNYC.org. How long is the film running?
79 minutes.
And is it a limited run or is it just...
It's a limited run, 1 week in New York.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
I appreciate it. Thank you.